Well, thank you very much. You might notice that there is a slight change in title from what you see on the screen to what's printed in the program. Program says doubt in science and faith. And thinking about it, that's really an inappropriate title. And I think this title, Doubt and Faith in Science and Religion, is much more descriptive of what I'm actually going to say, which is talking about the role of both doubt and faith in scientific investigation as well as in religious faith. So I see two common misperceptions or common views of science and faith with regard to the issues of doubt and uncertainty and faith. And one of them is that religious faith is founded on personal certainty, while science is based on skeptical inquiry. And this can be expressed in the sense of religion or religious perspectives are static, they're unchanging, they're resistant to doubt, and they're not subject to criticism. And that faith is almost viewed as not just believing in the absence of evidence or in the absence of observation, but almost in spite of it. Science, on the other hand, is viewed as being founded on skeptical inquiry, that doubt, a pursuit of doubt, is integral to the scientific enterprise, and that our conclusions are tentative and they're constantly subject to revision and change. Another aspect of this, what I see as a false dichotomy between science and religious faith, is that science is perceived as being based on observational fact, while religion is subjective and based on faith in unsubstantiated beliefs. And again, this has the idea of scientific conclusions are founded on tested or at least testable claims, and that as a result, science is really the only pursuit of truth that has the hope of reaching any kind of certain knowledge. Beliefs, on the other hand, are subjective, and they are fragile. They're subject to doubt. Doubt is kind of the enemy of faith. And that religious perspectives are essentially barriers to the pursuit of rational knowledge. Well, I see these common perceptions that are held both, I think, in both the Christian and scientific community as being caricatures. And they really show a lack of appreciation for the role of faith and doubt, uncertainty, in both science and religious faith. And another part of the misperceptions that drive a wedge in between the pursuit of science and religious faith. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to first look at the scientific enterprise and how both doubt and faith are part of the pursuit of science. And then we'll look at religious faith and the role of doubt in faith. So there's a whole range of sources of doubt, different types of uncertainty that enter into science. Kind of more trivially, perhaps, is the uncertainty that's simply related to the limits of measurement, that lack of precision in measurement. You always have error bars on your data. There's always imprecision. And that's kind of trivial in the context of what I'm going to say. Also probably not directly relevant is indeterminism that is a part of our theoretical understanding of the natural world. So whether you're talking about Heisenberg uncertainty principle or some quantum events, those are things that are understood as being part of our scientific understanding itself. They're intrinsic, inherent places for indeterminism. But the other things I have listed here, I think, have different roles to play. One is error that's result of human error. personal and cultural biases, perhaps even malfeasance and deliberate misrepresentation. Uncertainty due to our limited knowledge. Uncertainty that's related to the limits of the scientific enterprise itself, the methodologies of science. And also the ultimate reliance on scientific exploration on unprovable assumptions. So there is, as a result, plenty of cases in which faith is fundamental to science. One of the things I'll go a little more depth on is that science, as in all pursuits of knowledge, all types of knowledge, is based on unprovable assumptions. There is no such thing as a pursuit, objective pursuit of knowledge that's independent of making substantial beginning assumptions that are not subject to test. And that science also pursues its understanding of the natural world not in a void, but with certain expectations for what that physical reality is and is like. And we pursue our science accordingly. For example, a very simplistic one is we assume that the natural world, the physical universe, is intelligible. If we didn't believe that, we couldn't do science to begin with. And there's some even more constraints. We often talk about simplicity. We prefer simple explanations over complex ones with lots of epicycles. There's a sense of beauty. We talk about the beauty of mathematics. And those things are very strong drivers to science exploration. But they're not things that have that are testable in any kind of fashion. We pursue science with the trust that science is a path to truth. It's more than just a socially constructed phenomenon. We're not just brains, in glass jars on some shelf in which all of our experiences of reality are false. We're not in a matrix world, to refer to the recent film series. That our experiences of the universe, while they can deceive us, are still telling us something that's real about the real objective universe that's out there. But those are all assumptions. We do our science already assuming those characteristics of the universe. There's also the trust in the reliability of our current paradigm of consensus, and I'll talk about that. And that science is progressive, and that we understand more about the universe, more about physical reality now than we have in the past. So I want to elaborate on some of these aspects. First is that our scientific knowledge will always be incomplete and subject to error. There's no kind of future that we can look to, future that we can anticipate, in which the pursuit of science will come to an end. The end of science, as some people have referred to it. And this is widely recognized by many philosophers, historians of science, and others. Nicholas Rechter states in his book, The Limits of Science, we must come to terms with the fact that at any rate, at the scientific level of generality and precision, each of our accepted beliefs may turn out to be false, and many of our accepted beliefs will turn out to be false. In other words, there's no way to know beforehand that a particular view that we have, a particular understanding of the universe that we hold, will still be true 500 years from now. And he also continues to say, in light of the history of science, if there's one thing we can learn from the history of science, it is that the scientific theorizing of one day is looked upon by that of the next as deficient, and that there's nothing epistemically privileged about the present, any present, our own prominently included. In other words, you say, well, we're in kind of a privileged place. We have access to privileged knowledge that the ancients didn't have or the previous generations didn't have, and we can be certain about some of these conclusions that we have in current science. 200 years from now, they may very likely look upon us in that same light. We can never be assured that anything that we hold today in our science is going to carry on into the future. And such a perspective indicates not only the incompleteness of our knowledge, but its presumptive incorrectness as well. So the first thing is a humble recognition that we are always learning. Our knowledge is always incomplete. And that there are errors. There are things that we now accept that will be later shown to be false. And then there's the idea that, as I stated before, that our scientific enterprise itself is rooted in unproven assumptions. And this is Oz Guinness, a book that was very influential to me a number of years ago in his book, In Two Minds. And he says, when we set out to know something, we do not proceed by proving everything we know before we know it. If we are to know anything, we must proceed on the basis of certain things which cannot be proved, but which must be presupposed. So he's saying there's no pursuit of knowledge that you can work down to the very foundation and objectively analyze it by looking at evidence or test, being able to test those grounding assumptions. And Michael Polanyi, which I'm sure many of you are familiar with in his book, Personal Knowledge, picks up on this concept and says a test of proof or disproof is in fact irrelevant for the acceptance or rejection of fundamental beliefs. And to claim that you strictly refrain from believing anything that could be disproved is merely to cloak your own will to believe your beliefs behind a false pretense of self-critical severity. It's not one to mince words. And what he's criticizing here is what he calls objectivism, the idea of science as being superior to other forms of knowledge that's purely objective, that all the things that you hold, some people will say, I don't believe anything that couldn't be demonstrated or proved. That's a fallacy. No one can do that. And he says this emphasis on testable, objectified knowledge has distorted our understanding of truth. He says, objectivism has totally falsified our conception of truth by exalting what we can know and prove while covering up with ambiguous utterances all that we know and cannot prove, even though the latter knowledge underlies and must ultimately set its seal to all that we can prove. So as a result, science can make no claims to certainty. It is not a path to certain knowledge. And that's even true of rationality itself. Again, as Oz Guinness says, is a statement of faith. That rationality, rational argument is a path to truth, is itself an assumption that's assumed by faith. And I like this quote from Oz Guinness. Says, in a profound sense, we doubt not only because we are ignorant of something, but because we are absolutely certain of nothing. Henry Bauer, in his book, Scientific Literacy and the Myth of the Scientific Method, attacks the kind of simplistic model of the scientific method that's often referred to. It's kind of part of this objective view of scientific knowledge, that essentially it proceeds by testing and confirmation. And he says, the myth of the scientific method is not easily discarded because humankind is reluctant to accept that all knowledge contains an irreducible inherent element of uncertainty or doubt. And one of the modern recognitions of philosophers is that even our facts are theory-laden. Even what we perceive as objective facts are colored by our preconceived knowledge. But nonetheless, we have faith that science does progress. We have faith that the effectiveness, the utility of science gives us trust that we are coming closer to an understanding of the reality, the objective realities that is out there, but that we should never confuse that objective reality with what science states. Science will always fall short of that real objective reality out there. They're not the same thing. So science proceeds from metaphysical assumptions. George Kneller, in his book, Science as a Human Endeavor, argues that scientists and scientific community should be more transparent about the reality that we really are proceeding from metaphysical assumptions, and to make those explicit, and to allow those to be discussed. You know, what are the things that you see as undergirding your search for truth in the natural world? Do you see simplicity and harmony and beauty as things that should direct our understanding of the natural world? So the last thing I want to state here before we move on to looking at the religious community and religious experience is that science is a communal community enterprise activity. And that all the ideas that flow into science can have any number of origins. That where an idea comes from is irrelevant. So you have all manner of ideas that flow into the scientific enterprise, and they get winnowed out. And they get winnowed out through community. And it's only in community that that can happen. And so that the individual eccentricities or cultural biases or other things, just simple error or malfeasance or deliberate misrepresentation, to a large extent get winnowed out by that larger community of experts on that topic. And Henry Bauer again argues that the reason we perceive or understand science as having objectivity is not because the individual scientists are objective, but because they're a part of a community. And as he says here, that the scientific community works through consensus because, as he says, there's no other way to play effectively. And he's making a deliberate comparison of the scientific enterprise with a game, with playing a game. And you have to have rules to play the game. And the only way you can play the game of science is in community and by consensus. And he also argues that you can't do science in isolation. That one of the faults of kind of classical views of the scientific enterprise and scientific method is that you could be completely isolated and work through the scientific method and arrive at a valid conclusion. And he says that's not true. We can't do science in isolation because the person who comes up with an idea is the least likely person to know how to test his own ideas, his or her own ideas, and that it has to be passed to the larger community for their testing and analysis. And so what he argues here is that scientific consensus is not a bad thing. And it's not a bad thing that we are resistant to change in the scientific community, that it's difficult for new ideas to make it into the scientific consensus. That's the way it should be. It should be hard to get your ideas into the scientific consensus, because that's where the winnowing process occurs. It doesn't mean that ideas outside of the consensus are necessarily wrong, but they have to work their way in. They have to fight their way in. So that, to conclude with scientific questions, scientific knowledge is uncertain, but that doubt and uncertainty is important for the very conduct of science. It's something we have to recognize, and that extends, as we'll see, beyond science itself. So let me then flip to religion and draw some parallels here. Again, we have doubt in religion. Some of that doubt may be expressed in terms of lack of trust in God, doubt of God's goodness or other attributes. And in many cases, a lot of those types of doubts spring from personal or historical spiritual experience. There may be doubts that are associated with apparent contradictions or unanswered questions, uncertainties in interpretation of written revelation, and limits to written and general revelation. So that there is a need for faith. Again, religious experience, religious faith, is rooted, just the same as scientific exploration is, in unprovable assumptions. That there is a divine spiritual reality. That the experience of the divine, of the supernatural, is, again, not some socially constructed phenomena, but that it points to actual reality. That, you know, even though imperfect, we do see through a glass darkly. And that just as we understand science as a path to truth, we see religion as a path to truth. And that it, again, is something that is progressive. That our knowledge of God over the centuries is something that progresses and develops and matures. So in Scripture, lots of passages relating to faith. Faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. A faith, and without faith, is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists and that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. But as Guinness says again in his book, In Two Minds, he says, why do some people think that faith is necessarily troubled by doubt, but that knowledge is not? That somehow faith is unique in this regard? Or how is it that faith and uncertainty are automatically associated with each other, while knowledge is regarded as certain and therefore different? That's my whole point here. There's more similarity than difference between the pursuit of knowledge through science and the understanding of God through faith and revelation. Again, Oz Gibson says, without faith, there is no knowledge of any kind. All true faith depends on knowledge. Knowledge and faith are inseparable. The root of doubt is not in our faith, but in our humanness. And I think there's an increasing recognition in the scientific community that not all truth is accessible through science. Science has its limitations. And going back, this is Richard Feynman in 1998 in a book of his lectures called The Meaning of It All. And he says, but if a thing is not scientific, if it cannot be subjected to the test of observation, this does not mean that it is dead or wrong or stupid. Scientists take all those things that can be analyzed by observation, and thus the things called science are found out. But there are some things left out for which the method does not work. Michael Polanyi says that God cannot be observed any more than truth or beauty can be observed. He exists in the sense that he is to be worshipped and obeyed, but not otherwise, not as a fact, any more than truth, beauty, or justice exist as facts. Okay. Will do. And religion, like science, is dynamic. It's changeable, and it's also done in community. And just as science cannot be done in isolation, we can't pursue science and scientific knowledge without community. We can't pursue the knowledge of God without community either. Thank you.
Philosophical critique of scientific knowledge and some very interesting things there. many of us physicists would view what we do more as model building than as something that is either false or true. It's something that you build a model that's approximately true at some level. And some of us would claim that Newton's laws are approximately true for planetary orbits to 8 or 9 digits, and that's not going to change. How do you work that in?
Okay. I guess what I'm saying is not that that's part of our understanding of the progressive nature of science. You know, we're confident that our understanding of the natural world is richer and fuller and more complete than it was in past generations. But I think the important point that I've gained from these readings is that we also recognize we're in a timeline, we're at a particular point in time, and that someone 200 years ago would think the same. Would they have the same perspective? We understand more than the ancients did. There are certain things that we are confident about as being unchangeable understandings of the natural world. 200 years later, they're not true anymore. So we don't know what future discoveries. One writer said, "We don't know what we don't." There's the unknowable unknown. Things that are so far out of our experience that we don't even know what we don't know. And those unknown unknowns may overturn some very strongly held views of the natural world that we have now. Simply, we can't even conceive of them. They're beyond our ability to conceive.
You're saying that religion changes, and we can see, for example, in the history of our faith, there is a big change when Moses gave the law, and then there is a huge change when the Lord Jesus came. You anticipate that there will be another big change. Islam asserts that there is a big change when Muhammad came.
No, I do think that we should see our religious understandings as being dynamic and changing, and it's not just dramatic changes in revelation like you mentioned, but that through the experience of God in community, through the interaction of our religious understandings with developing understandings of the physical world, broadens and deepens our understanding of God and gives us perceptions of the divine that we couldn't have had before. And so I think we should recognize that faith is something that's dynamic and changing and not static and immobile and resistant to change.
Anyone else? I'd ask you, how would you define faith in this sense?
I think the quote from faith is the assurance of things hoped for, the convictions of things not seen, is a good definition. And I think that applies to the things that we have to assume and presuppose in the doing of science as well. We're presupposing things that are unseen, things that are hoped for, and we're convicted of those truths and then proceed on from there. So I think it applies in both the religious and the scientific realm.
Thank you very much.